Hey, do you like the Star Wars? Well, we do too here at the Rancor Pit, and you're going to find out we're not the only ones. And that is myself and, of course,
Eddie Medina. Yeah, apparently Star Wars is such a massive cultural phenomenon that it has weaved its way into all sorts of things, movies, TV, comics, video games. In particular, tonight's topic would be movies, correct, Cole?
This is episode one. We're going to do a three-pronged approach to the phenomenon of Star Wars. You know, we talk often on this show, and I'm sure everyone, it's pretty well recognized that it is a cultural phenomenon in its own right. But beyond the films themselves, their impact is felt all over the place.
Yeah.
And as you pointed out, movies, television, comics, we're not talking about, you know, more Star Wars movies or Marvel's relaunch of Star Wars comic. We're talking about where comic books, movies, television shows, comic strips, what have you, are so, their writers and creators are so influenced by Star Wars that they'll, it's almost like name dropping and trying to throw in your own little take on a Star Wars nod or stuff. Kevin Smith's a great example as a filmmaker who just can't shut up about Star Wars. Makes a lot of other pop culture references, but I think by and large you would find more Star Wars than anything else.
Well, it's funny that you bring up Kevin Smith because I know he made the joke back in the day that after the prequel started coming out and Lucas was putting in Samuel Jackson, because Samuel Jackson mentioned he was a big Star Wars fan from the first time he was high and saw New Hope and everything,
right,
to the new kids on the block or somebody who was
one
of those boy bands.
Backstreet Boys.
Somebody.
Oh,
they're all the same.
The outcry from the fans, that, you know, it's not like they're going to jump up and do a concert or something.
Well, I know.
At that point, it might have been.
Right. But Kevin Smith made the point that Lucas was okay with bringing in all these other Star Wars fans to do cameos in the prequels. But here, Kevin Smith was, he said, he referenced Star Wars in every one of his movies and never once got an invite.
He wasn't going to be the fat Jedi.
No, no. But, you know, of course, J.J., you know, fixed all that because apparently he's in The Force Awakens. At least his voice is in The Force Awakens.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He's somewhere. I'm not sure.
Apparently he voices the Yosemite Sam-esque alien rebel pilot, or resistance pilot, Asti.
Oh, really?
I think he's the one who's like, yeah, but no damage. I got a cartoon voice.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that would explain it. Cause,
stop,
like,
you
we
idiot.
Saw the
movie. That calls her that rabbit.
Because Bobby Blake and I were talking about how out of place that voice sounded out of the movie. It didn't sound like what you would expect from Atsy. Or Asti, or whatever his name is, and I guess that would almost explain it. Now I kind of wish I didn't know that was Kevin Smith, because now I'm going to be thinking, you know, Snoochie Noochies every time he comes.
It could have been, yeah.
Wow.
We smoked them once. talking about, just kind of leading into this, well before episode one, there were already plenty of films nodding to, making reference to, utilizing Star Wars in some way.
Oh, yeah.
So it seems, I don't know if you'd call it ironic or not, that episode one kind of turned the tables. Thankfully, the only time this happened, where the opposite was occurring, where instead of like R2 and 3PO being inscribed into the hieroglyphs, the souls, you have things like the pod from 2001 in Watto's junk shop, or a shudder to have to say this, or you get the Senator Eat T, who would become known as Greeblips, or Spielberg spelled backward. Vote now.
That really hurts you, doesn't it?
It does. Well, especially because if you look really closely at their Senate pod, there is a speaking spell installed in the console.
Yeah. Show me on the Senate pod where they hurt you, Cole.
Well, it was because that was sort of like the translation was coming through via speaking spell, so it took forever for them to... What's going to be patient? You're like, okay, we're having a vote of no confidence in Chancellor Valorum. And then they're over there yelling vote now after the fervor's died down.
I know.
Poor little guys, you know, they just... No sprechen Sie Deutsch, so there you go.
Well, you know, you mentioned, I hadn't thought about this particular thing, but you mentioned the R-3PO carved into the Well of the Souls scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, in Close Encounters...
That had just popped into my head as
right,
well.
Right, I know, I've forgotten about this. I can't remember if I've seen it directly, I just remember people talking about it, where... The ship is flying overhead. Is it one of the female characters, the mom or somebody? And she, as you look up, you can see R2-D2 somewhere on the spaceship or something?
What I know, I did see some imagery in Starlog or somewhere. It was actually on the mothership.
The mothership, okay.
Because ILM actually built a prop. You know, with all those little fiddly bits and greeblies and what have you.
I knew you were going to say fiddly bits.
And was it the, was it tchotchkes? Is that what Mark Hamill says about?
I think so.
About the Death Star. But among all the little prongs and points and whelks and cubicles is an actual R2-D2 from the Revell or AMT or whoever had the license. The first model kit of the X-Wing, the R2, was a separate piece. You actually glued down into the port.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or you could, I guess, presumably leave it removable.
Wow.
And they, I think, just as a, you know, the eagle-eyed among us, unless you have, like, Superman's micro-vision or something, and even then... I don't think anyone was ever meant to see that. It was just sort of a little private in-joke.
Yeah.
But in the days before the internet, we had the analog internet known as magazines. When I talk about things that are out of date, I have
that
to...
That sounds like something on the periodic table of elements.
Magazine. It's a noble gas. But,
yes.
This is what I aspire to become. But I always have to speak about things that are like really antiquated nowadays or seemingly anachronistic, even though they're really still around. I have to say them like they say Kentucky in the movie Last of the Mohicans. Kentucky. And to break it down into its constituent syllables.
Which, oddly enough, also has a Star Wars reference in that movie.
Oh, yes, it was bizarre. But, yeah, at one point, Uncas refers to Hawkeye as Yoda. To which he replies, I have a bad feeling about this.
Right.
And I have a bad feeling about this is something we will get to a little later in the show. Trust me, there's a reason... That comes up. And no, please don't remind us that Uncas never said Yoda. It was, in fact, an extrapolation on the where they're singing the Camptown Ladies. And someone yells, Yoda, Yoda.
Yes, it's just a joke.
Yes. Jack's dad, call me Joka.
Well... You know, just to kind of kickstart things, you know, there's
kick tons us of, back on track for us.
Yeah, there's tons of references in movies. You know, there's a galore. We can't even begin to touch on all of them, so we're just going to reference the movies we've actually seen.
Yes, in fact, by way of kind of refreshing our own memories, we did a little research, and some of the sites that, you know, have, where people have taken the time to
more time than we ever would.
Yeah, exactly. To try to, you know, consolidate all of these references. And there are hundreds of them, probably even more than they could find. They do at intervals kind of stretch a bit trying to reach for Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
But at other times, you know, there are obvious lines where someone says, you know, hey, C-3PO, and yeah, that's Star Wars. And like I said, we're going to get to that in the section called I've Got a Bad Feeling About This. But quite rightly, Eddie pointed out that our, you know, for him, he didn't feel comfortable speaking to films he'd never seen. And I thought, you know, that's a good point. So we will acknowledge that, you know, you may have a lot of movies you've seen where you're like, oh, well, there was a Star Wars reference in this movie, and you didn't even so much as mention it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, we probably don't really have a good frame of reference, and I'm not going to act like, oh, you know, I remember this one part where...
Yeah, we're not that podcast. We're not the know-it-all hosts.
Or the ones said, who like, read everything
Star Wars
that they
podcast.
See on, or just read word for word everything you see on the screen in front of you. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the movies that... I think the obvious jumping off point is let's just start at the base of the iceberg instead of the tip, and that would be probably someone who would refer to himself as the base of an iceberg, none other than Kevin Smith. I mean, anyone who is of broad girth and has branded himself as Fat Man certainly is self-deprecating enough to allow that. Analog.
Yeah, if he's either referring to himself as Fat Man on Batman, or in Mallrats' case, Badass, Fly Fat Ass, Fly.
Yeah, tubby, lard ass, lunchbox.
Lunchbox, ton of fun.
So
none of those are actually Star Wars references.
Yeah,
so.
Oddly enough, those would be Clerks references or Kevin Smith references that might appear in other films.
Right, exactly.
If he's lucky. So, you know, certainly Kevin Smith will be the first to, and has more or less gone on record to say that, you know, his love of Star Wars is splattered all over his films. And, well, what the... the Kevin Smith alarm went off there. So, you know, some of the things that sprung to mind immediately for both of us were Kevin Smith things.
Yeah, Clerks being the obvious one, because, see, Clerks gave us that classic back-and-forth scene with the contractor, the building contractor, and Dante and Randall, where they discuss... You know, the contractors that were on the Death Star when it blew up. So.
And it was one of those things where, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that Clerks became such a cult classic and became such a big success is it spoke to the very audience it was aimed at. And that is the people who have these very conversations. Maybe not that precise one, but... Your hardcore Star Wars fan, your hardcore fanboy type, is going to sit around and have speculative conversations about the most ridiculous rethinking of the things that they love.
And see, what's beautiful about Clerks is that was really the first time someone did something like that in a movie where it was almost the script is almost completely centered around those types of conversations. And it was after Clerks where things like, you know, Kevin Williamson even said himself that Kevin Smith and Clerks inspired him to be so pop culture reference heavy in Scream when he wrote that script. He said Scream is a direct result of Clerks because Kevin Smith took that leap to put in all these references, you know, in abundance in his script.
Yeah, dare to speak the language.
It's almost it became commonplace after that to the point where I had this argument one time with someone who they said, oh, you know, we have pop culture references in TV and film now because of shows like Gilmore Girls because all they want to do is reference stuff in pop culture. I was like, F Gilmore Girls.
That would almost be tantamount to saying the same was true of Big Bang Theory.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. You know. And I was like, Gilmore Girls, those writers took it from Kevin Smith. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I think Kevin Smith was really the first person to say, this is what's going on out in the world.
Yeah.
And let's acknowledge that through the vehicle of these characters. And I think it spoke to so many of us because we're like, that's me.
Yeah.
That's me and my friends sitting around and making ridiculous, you know, that's me like having a Star Wars podcast every other week.
Whoa, yeah. Oh. That's yeah, right. That's me in the bathroom with the dead. No, wait, no way.
Oh, wow. Way. Whoa, whoa. We promised we wouldn't tell anyone about that.
But, you know, it took that, and it wasn't just that little bit of back and forth scene, but there was other things in it too, like the Chewbacca song, the What a Wookiee.
Yeah.
You know, people nowadays even still reference the Chewbacca song from Clerks because, like, not only did he reference Star Wars in the movies, but he actually, one of the soundtrack pieces is a Star Wars song about Chewbacca, no less.
And, you know, even before Clerks, there was you had the cultural impact, as we've spoken before, on the Wannabes episode, where, you know, everybody was trying to be the next Star Wars.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it's often said that the greatest form of flattery is imitation. But I would argue that an even greater form of flattery is parody.
Yes.
That if you've made a big enough impact where someone considers what you've created is a good source material for humor.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the starting gun there was, of course, with Hardware Wars.
Yeah.
Which was made for like $12. But, you know, and it takes off from there. But within the context of movies, you had a couple of different approaches. You have that sort of conversational approach, that sort of referencing an aspect of the real world within a film that's taking place in the real world.
Yes.
Where the characters would have gone to see movies, amongst which were Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the type of nods to Star Wars where it's about, you know, a reference is either built into a scene or the actions or something that's a very deliberate take on that. One that I was reminded of in my research was, for example, Airplane 2.
Oh my gosh.
Which, you know, was they went just all in. Let's just make it like Going to the Moon's a Milk Run, just so we can do a Star. They basically wanted to do a parody of everything sci-fi.
Yeah.
That they could squeeze in while still within the context of the airplane kind of plot vehicle and doing all the Zucker Brothers visual. It just occurred to me just now, literally, that I think that's why I love the Family Guy so much.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like that on steroids. It's like Airplane and Naked Gun on steroids.
Oh, wow.
Not only are you making references like, you know, well, they're on instruments. Da-da-da-da. You know, they're all on the sax and trombone and stuff in the cockpit. It takes a step further and references like, you know, if somebody says something, then all of a sudden you have a quick scene of that playing out.
Gotcha.
And they do a lot of that in Family Guy, where and we'll get to television on the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do our, this is episode one.
That'll give me some time to actually watch those Family Guy Star Wars episodes.
Yeah, I mean, of course they did the full scale episodes that parodied the entire films, which were brilliantly done for the most part. All of them suffer from something Family Guy does well, which is bring the entire proceedings to a screeching halt. But that's,
wow,
that's a story for another day.
That'll be talked about on our Family Guy podcast.
That's right. Lucky there's a family podcast. Another example of that type of referential parody is in, like, say, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, where Dr. Evil is going to place a laser on the moon to threaten the Earth with and threaten world governments with. And he's calling this a Death Star. And, of course, he's completely...
I like how you had to do the...
You have to drop into that. And, of course, Scott Eel's back there going, rip off! Rip off! And Dr. Evil is clueless because he doesn't realize that this phrase he thinks he's coined already belongs to the ages.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a great little nod to Star Wars without actually being related to it. So
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, like, getting back to Kevin Smith, by the time, you know, there was a huge gap, obviously, between Clerks and Clerks 2. And what was kind of brilliant in the way that Kevin Smith can script these movies is that, you know, Clerks kind of kicked off that, I guess, quote, fad of people doing pop culture references in movies. And so we were getting, it almost became commonplace by the time Clerks 2 came about. So you're thinking, well, Clerks 2, if he's going to give us more of that, well, we've already seen that in all these other movies and we're kind of sick of it by now. But what was genius about is, like, when he does his references in Clerks 2, again, he does what he does best. He makes it seem so natural.
Yes.
That whole bit with, there's only one return, and it's not of the king, it's of the Jedi. You know, that whole scene, I could pee my pants laughing so hard at that scene. It is so funny, and it feels so natural.
Exactly. It's very organic, and it also comes across like, there is a recognition that, you know, Clerks was very Star Wars reference heavy.
Yeah.
So Clerks 2 becomes referencing, at the time, more contemporary things.
Yeah.
So, you know, there wasn't, you know, Episode 7 was still years away, for example, and there, I forget the chronology here where we were with Episodes 1 through 3 at that point. But, so, you know, things like Lord of the Rings become more the reference, but there's always that anchor. Everything Kevin Smith does within at least the Viewisk universe has those little Star Wars hooks in it.
Yeah. And episodes 1 through 3 had already come out by the time Clerks 2 came out because they referenced Mannakin Skywalker and Jar Jar Binks in that scene also.
And then you have, for example, you know, following Clerks, you have the film that I wouldn't be surprised if as a joke ever got re-released as a special edition of Mallrats, which for years, you know, was sort of like the Star Wars holiday special of Kevin Smith because he renounced it so much and then I think learned to embrace it.
Which is funny because Mallrats is what made me a Kevin Smith fan. I hadn't seen Clerks yet.
Yeah, and Mallrats it was a good sophomore film, I think, for him. But it is, you know, you've got Jay and Silent Bob, where Silent Bob's trying to do the Jedi mind trick with his cigarette.
I mean, right off at the, toward the beginning of the movie, already getting it. And to follow that up with an equally cool reference, and, you know, they do the Snicky Wolverine reference in the same scene. It's like, I think that's why I fell in love with the movie so quickly.
Yeah, it's like, good night. This is exactly all over the map, like a lot of conversations become. Uh-huh. You're just, it's like rapid fire, grab as many references. It's like the hungry hippos of conversations where there's just like all these references flying around and everybody's out there just snatching them up.
Nice.
And then at the end of the game, you see how many marbles you've pooped out at the end.
I have to mention that to Colleen. She loves hungry hippos.
Nice. I got to thinking about the way a lot of our conversations go, like on this show or just in general with friends. And it really is. It's like there's, it's all out there. And we're all just like grasping at it constantly.
How can we turn that concept, the hungry hippo saying, into an all con game?
Oh, wow.
Where we write things on the marbles and then you have to snap at them and then, we got to figure that one out.
We got to develop that for 2017. That's
there you go.
So as we tend not to do things too linearly, but as far as Kevin Smith goes, you do have this sort of progression where, you know, you can see film to film to film Then I think what is next? We're going into Dogma.
No, Chasing Amy.
Sorry, Chasing Amy. That's right. Oh yeah. Then you got
Hooper X.
That's right.
Lando. Revoked Lando.
That's right. And of course the whole that reference to Darth Vader.
Or whatever.
About how Darth Vader, you know, is the most epic black guy ever, and then it turns out he's just some old crusty cracker underneath, and then it's like you're trying to say that all black people are
beautiful
white.
Black massage to reveal an old white dude. I know it's been years since I've seen Chasing Amy, but that's how I remember the scene going.
It was just one of the most brilliant takes on Darth Vader.
You know, that scene is brilliant because we all, up to that point, just thought that the Death Star contractor seeing Clerks was the end-all, be-all to Star Wars.
Yes, exactly. It was like, how do you one-up that? Well, there you go.
And then they bust out with that Lando bit with Hooper X and Chasing Amy, and they top it. They taunted. I mean, like, oh my god!
Who's just challenge me to outdo myself, as it were.
Well, even later on in Chasing Amy, the little bit that Solemn Bob actually speaks, one of his lines is "Do or do not." There is no.
Oh, that's right.
So I got a few times. It's like he's either doing the Jedi mind trick and supposedly grabbing.
I think at that point, yeah, he probably began to think of himself as a Jedi, you know.
Uh-huh.
He's got those delusions of grandeur. What? Oh, a Star Wars reference.
Yeah. There you go. Our own podcast.
That's right. Now we, too, can be part of the
part
show.
Part two of our podcast, we'll be referencing our own podcast.
That's right.
And we reference Star Wars.
Yeah, actually, the third episode will just simply be our own references to Star Wars within a Star Wars podcast. We're going to have to go back and do a little research. So I'm pretty sure we've mentioned stuff in Star Wars.
Oh, my gosh.
It comes up like that. But I guess we move into Dogma.
Well, you take Dogma, because I've only seen it once, and it's been so long.
Well, and like, you know, after Clerks, I mean, even within Clerks, it's just that little smattering, like, just enough Star Wars references, not to be like, you know, does this guy ever see another movie ever?
Yeah.
And, you know, Dogma brings in a lot of things, like, there's a conversation at a diner where In very Jay fashion, he's like, you know, he equates himself to Han Solo, Silent Bob to Chewbacca. Can't remember her name now, but the female leads.
Salma Hayek, or is it?
Yeah.
God, dog, I can't even think of her name.
The last.
Who you're talking about.
It's been a while.
Linda Fiorentino?
I think that's right. I was about to say that, and I stopped myself, so I was apparently on the right track.
I'm probably mispronouncing her last name.
Equates her to Ben Kenobi, and they're like at a diner or something, and he's like, this is that effed up bar! Because she has sort of approached them to literally be her transport to Alderaan since.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a wonderful corollary that the story was taking that kind of turn.
Just to take a little side rail, which actually references another movie that references Star Wars. So you're saying that they're comparing themselves to Han and Chewie in that bit, right?
Yeah, because she's sort of like, you know, they're out there hanging out doing their thing, and she's sort of directed to them.
Yeah, yeah.
As being the prophets that she's supposed to be seeking, and of course, you know, you couldn't ask for a less legitimate
prophets.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because
it's a hard sell.
Obviously, Dogma has Ben Affleck. Well, Ben Affleck in Armageddon almost uses that same bit with the Wilson brother, where they're chit chatting amongst themselves, and he says. Well, if anybody's anybody, I'm Han Solo, and you're Chewbacca. It's like, and the Wilson guy says, Chewie, have you even seen Star Wars? Something that's kind of odd that he used the same bit almost that was in his other movie, Dogma, with you know, it plays a little different, but it's almost the same type of reference.
Certainly, and especially in that, I guess, you know, you've got your, you actually have pilots and co-pilots in that.
Well, they were drillers. They weren't, yeah. They're,
that's right. They somebody else had to drive them there.
Yeah. So, in other words, they were the Ben Kenobi in that movie. They needed the ride up to space. But, anyways.
Yes, I can't think of any other analog to, oil riggers. They would, you know. There really wasn't anybody in Star Wars doing a lot of, you know.
The closer you get are moisture farmers.
Yeah, I guess Luke would be the closest analog.
Or the spice mines of Kessel.
Oh, or if you were referring to the misprint in the old Marvel Star Wars, the spine mines of Kessel.
Oh, really? Did they do that?
Yeah, there was actually a misprint, and in fact, there was also, just to go slightly off topic real quick, a misprint where when Luke comes to the burning remains of the Lars farm, he cries out, Aunt Beru, Uncle Ben. So for a moment there, he thought he was Peter Parker. Or he thought that maybe the smoke coming out of the kitchen was the rice was burning. I'm not sure which.
Wow.
Whoa. He loved his rice, you know. And when you're on a world where you have to And you know, when you're on a world where you have to farm water, the water you need for the boil-in bag is a valuable commodity. You damn well better not be burning it.
So. Oh my gosh.
I'll have to try to remember that.
And how odd is that, that there would be, that somebody at Marvel Comics would think there would be something, some sort of mine that you're mining spines? Like, yeah, how odd is that? I mean, are you the tingler or what?
Wow. And no one will be seated during the,
right.
The spine chilling, charred remains of Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru scene.
Oh, man. Okay.
And then, of course, the most blatant reference of all is Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Oh, my gosh. From the opening scrolled, the opening scene.
The mere title was deliberately a nod. Then they jump at every possible, you know, that is the Star Wars Hungry Hungry Hippos.
Right.
For Kevin Smith, because it's...
There needs to be a Star Wars version of that. But Hungry Hungry Huts. We just have a bunch of huts in a circle.
Yeah. That would actually almost be easy to make.
That way you could be Jabba, Zorba, or Stinky.
Yeah, like the little...
Or what's the other...
Well, there was Gardella.
What's the one that...
Gardella the Hutt's going to be the pink one, you know, because nobody wants to play the pink hippo.
Yeah, that's true.
Except in Japan, where it's good luck, so, you know.
Oh, there you go. Gardula the Hutt. Yeah, so there you go. Hungry Hungry Huts.
I like that. I want to see Hungry Hungry Huts. Somebody get to work on that.
Not us, but somebody.
Yeah, that's right. And all the little marbles are just like little froggies from the bowl.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Death Stars, but the froggies make more sense.
Yeah.
But, so Jane, Saul, and Bob, yeah. I mean, it's got everything throughout the whole movie. All the way up to Mark Hamill being in it, Carrie Fisher being in it, even though she's not a Star Wars reference herself.
Yeah, the very deliberate attempt to get as many Star Wars actors in as possible.
But, you know, Mark Hamill coming out as the cockknocker with his lightsaber-esque weapon. And
of course, the bong-hilted lightsaber for...
That's right, of course. How could I forget that?
For Blunt Man and Chronic. And the line from the director, George Lucas is going to sue somebody. So, just this all-around acknowledgement.
What is it about Chris Rock that he gets, like, the best lines in all of the movies?
Yeah, it looks like George Lucas is going to sue somebody. I should have used that for screen time at AllCon this year.
Oh my gosh, it's like Lethal Weapon 4. He's got the best lines in Lethal Weapon 4. I kid you not.
Well, then the line from Holden the character carried over from Chasing Amy, Ben Affleck saying, I don't think I'm alone in the world, but I imagine this flick may be the worst idea since Greedo Shooting First.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about
that. It was like Kevin Smith was speaking for us all. Except for Skippy McFederson, who still contends that that was the way it should have been.
Oh, Skippy McFederson did,
yeah,
does he?
Well, this surprised me, you know.
I thought we were never to speak of Skippy McFederson
in
our podcast.
In this particular case, I had to bring him up because he's wrong. You're wrong, Skippy. And,
God.
Oh, yeah, I'd forgotten that Jay, also occurred to me that Jay's lightsaber was double-bladed.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
So you are referring even further to the some of the little cosmetic or unique changes that would come along in Star Wars with episodes 1 through 3.
Yeah.
And the, yes, and the security guard at Miramax.
Yeah.
Referring to Echo Base.
Good
night.
He's
checking in.
There's a lot more than I remember in that movie as far as references. Goodness.
Yeah, that one was, again, I think that was the most laden. If you look at various lists, there's tons of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one other film I can think of it's almost a neck-and-neck race. It's slightly more Star Trek laden, but the Star Wars references are there. A movie I highly recommend to fanboys. And, speaking of which, part of what inspired this particular episode was, I believe, what is it, the 25th anniversary? Or,
of what?
Or is this just, we were coming up on the anniversary anyway of Fanboys.
Oh, it hasn't been that long, but we should look at
it. It's probably an oddball amount. Like, now that I say that, it'll probably turn out to be like the 17th anniversary or the 11th anniversary or something like that. But this was the anniversary of Fanboys, right?
Now, before we get into Fanboys, we're forgetting one more Kevin Smith movie that should be referenced.
Oh, yes.
And that's Zack and Miri.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Without getting into too gory details.
I mean, because it is, after all, Zack and Miri make a porno.
Yeah.
But the fact that, yes, the porno they were seeking to make would have been a Star Wars porn parody.
Where they would have had 6 chapters, I guess, eventually. They were planning all 6 movies.
Yeah, one of the more enthusiastic partners wanted to go all in, and I guess I was actually thinking about that the other day, and I came up with the title, which I will not speak for Star Wars Episode 7.
Oh, no. Yes, let's try to keep Episode 7 a little bit more pure.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith's already defiled the other 6 with his Zack and
Miri. I would not
references.
Be surprised, though, if there is a Zack and Miri reference. And in fact, I would say, like Kevin Smith, listen to this crap, but, I would hope that one of the upcoming, like, Mallrats 2 or Clerks 3, it would be hilarious if there was somehow a reference to someone having a DVD or whatever, or downloading the Episode 7 of that as a nod back to Zack and Miri.
Uh-huh.
With whatever title he might give the Episode 7 of their series. Because I think that would be absolutely brilliant. Because it would be sort of a double shot nod, a nod to himself and a nod to Star Wars.
Really? You had to say double shot when referencing Zack.
Oh, yeah, I shouldn't have done that.
But no, Fanboys actually came out in 2009.
And as icebergs go, that was just the tip.
Oh, wow.
See what happens when you bring up Zack and Miri make a porno.
But Fanboys, February 6, 2009. So we missed the anniversary by 2 days on this
And it's not even remotely as old as I was imagining.
No.
It's funny. Sometimes,
what?
Sometimes time flies.
Older than Clerks?
And in other ways, really. What the hell? How'd that happen? In some ways, time flies for me. And in other ways, it apparently sits very still.
Right.
Because I was honestly thought it was a lot longer ago. Because that was a film
I think you were thinking fanboys, but in reality, you were really meaning to say Saturday Night Fever, I think.
That may well have been, yes.
Gosh. But yeah, 2009, so that would make us, what, this would make the seventh anniversary?
I knew it would be some oddball, like, meaningless anniversary, you know, that has no round numbers or significance.
It never is.
Yeah, 7 years. It's just the number seven anniversary. But Fanboys is an interesting thing because it is very much a love letter to Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
It pretty much got slightly worse treatment from the studio as far as distribution than Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie, did. It never played theatrically in the Dallas area. It played in all of three markets in Texas, if I remember correctly, at the time. It was somewhere between three and five cities.
Yeah.
In Texas.
Uh-huh.
The second largest and one of the most populous states in the nation.
Uh-huh.
And it gets a pissy little handful of people. I thought it was 1978 again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when something wasn't playing in every movie theater.
Exactly. Well, you say it didn't play theatrically in Dallas, but in fact, Cole, it did, because you and I were both there that night that it played theatrically in Dallas.
It did not play theatrically in Dallas as part of its
first initial run, yes.
Yeah. It took the concerted efforts of someone who we now even more than ever need to have as a guest on the show, of Eric Shirey, mm-hmm. to arrange a DFW screening in Grand Prairie.
Yeah.
That, yes, we did, in fact, did get to attend, and had an absolute blast. And
for those who may be interested in that night, it was interesting because he held it at the historic Grand Prairie Uptown Theater?
I believe it's called the Uptown, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's a nice little landmark there in Grand Prairie, and he had a screen of both Fanboys and The Phantom Menace, because it was the 10-year anniversary, I believe, of Phantom Menace. And
which is ironically, as a result, even older, yet again, that much older than Fanboys.
Yeah. So, yeah, you were saying 25 years. How could a movie about the Phantom Menace come out?
Be almost as old as Star Wars is. Or, yeah, be older than the Phantom Menace.
The Phantom Menace wasn't even a thing yet, and they're referencing it.
Yeah, and the whole plot centers around a movie that wouldn't have existed for decades.
So anyway, so at this theater, they showed Phantom Menace and Fanboys. So Eric had enough space in the lobby for two vendors to set up with Star Wars merchandise. And guess who those two vendors were?
They're side by side.
None other than Jedi Cole Houston and Eddie Medina.
And ironically, that was 44 years before this podcast. There's this strange time warp around that film. I don't understand. It's like that god awful Star Trek Generations.
44 years. For the record, I am 41 years old.
That's what makes it even more bizarre.
So yes, future co-hosts of the Rancor Pit were set up side by side as the only two vendors at this event.
That was really something.
And since we're talking about that night, I have to say this real quick. The 501st was there, and that was Colleen's first interaction with the 501st. And so there was a ton of stormtroopers and one Darth Vader. Well, she wanted her picture with the stormtroopers for some reason, not Vader. And so she was trying to get their attention. You know, they had already said, "Yeah, we can take our picture with you." She was like, "Fine." And then she goes over to their spot. She's there. They're not. And so she's trying to get their attention. "Okay, guys, come over. We got to do the picture." And they're all just kind of like in their own little world. So finally she yells out, "Can I have all the white guys over here for the picture?"
Wow.
Meaning the white armored guys.
Yes.
That got their attention. But anyways, so, yes, Fanboys.
Ah, yes.
The story itself is based in 1998, and the plot is a group of friends. One of the friends it has a terminal disease. I can't remember what the actual disease was, but it's on the cusp of Phantom Menace coming out in theaters, and they know he's not going to more likely make it for that premiere. So they have this plan to travel cross country to break into Skywalker Ranch and show their friend the Phantom Menace as like his dying wish.
Yes, their grand scheme is to fulfill that desire. And in a strange kind of actual genuine irony, I felt very much like, you know, life imitating art.
Mm-hmm.
With episode 7.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I hope that people will see that this is a very poignant thing. It just seemed rather like, you know, this was how this would have played out in the real world. You know, no one gets a mad scheme to go break into Skywalker Ranch.
And, oh, yeah, yeah.
That makes a wonderful comedy, but the reality is that, you know, here was something very similar playing out in real life, and I couldn't help but, you know, draw a corollary with fanboys.
With the Daniel Fleetwood story.
Yes.
And, yeah, yeah.
So apparently if the guys from Fanboys had just thought about it, you know, they could have saved themselves a lot of gas money.
Yeah. Well, and that's what's the neat thing about the real world is that the studios aren't so cold that they would just turn a blind eye to someone's reasonable plea, you know, and thankfully we see that, you know, JJ and everyone else do have a heart, and
that's
they
right.
will grant wishes if you ask the right way, not break into Skywalker Ranch.
That's right. Especially now, since, you know,
yeah, exactly.
George Lucas himself is not going to be wandering around the hall like, oh, come on in, guys. I don't. That's not even part of the movie, I swear. It was a fun movie because it was, again, one of these things where, you know, it's one of the, literally like the children of Clerks, that those doors were open. The studios didn't recognize the marketability of it, but sadly, but, you know, that was another that spoke to a very Star Wars generation, because here were these friends who were just like your friends, if you're steeped in pop culture. Granted, the, you know, characterization all was taking a lot different approach.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kevin Smith set a bar for writing organic dialogues that is kind of puts you in the mind of a more comedic Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where you're, you know, the approach is very different, but the idea of an extended dialogue that feels very natural is there in both of those directors.
Yeah. And, you know, when I first heard about Fanboys and heard the concept of it, my first initial reaction was like, oh, great, we're going to get another Kevin Smith Clerks ripoff. Because at that point, there had been other people who attempted to use that formula that Kevin had established and make their own little, you know, not fan film, but make their own independent film. And, of course, most of them are long and forgotten because they're not good at all. They just did not get it. And so I'm thinking Fanboys is just going to be another one of these Kevin Smith ripoffs. And in a way, it's a lot more – it plays a lot more comedic, almost in the vein of Jane, Saw, and Bob. But like you were saying, there's still enough heart and organic feeling script there to where it doesn't come across as a Kevin Smith ripoff, at least not to me. And it doesn't seem to with a lot of the fans, because it seems like it's pretty well embraced by a lot of the same fans that embrace the Kevin Smith movies.
Yeah, and I hadn't really thought about the fact that there were some directors or writers and such trying to capitalize on that. And I think they concentrated on too hard on the pop culture reference aspect and not enough on the character aspect.
I can't even... and literally, I can't even recall the names of these movies, but I did watch clips from them because I would hear about them being bandied around.
Yeah.
And I would find them on YouTube eventually. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are horrible. It's literally, they literally, most of them play as almost a high school, high school student project. They're so well, they're so poorly written and directed. But thankfully, Fanboys did not come across that way at all once I got around to actually seeing it.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It's like you said, it's got a lot of character. You love the characters. And that was my introduction to a lot of these actors. I had never seen Dan Fogler. Is that Fogler? Is that how you say his name?
That's how I will him. Say it now. On your behalf.
I hadn't seen him in anything until that movie. I had heard of Kristen Bell, but I hadn't seen her until this particular movie. Sam Huntington, I had seen him only once previously. And so, yeah, this introduced me to a lot of these actors. And, yeah, man, it's a good movie. It's definitely one you want to go back and check out if you haven't seen it.
It is very much the Star Wars centric. It definitely takes a lot of cues from Kevin Smith movies. I can't back this up with anything other than just a general feel, and I'm not even really certain which came first. But the other movie I was going to mention was Free Enterprise, which I highly recommend because it is, like my friend Steve, who's been on the show before, when we saw it, it's like when Catherine and I first saw it, she goes, "That's you and Steve." Yeah. Oh, it is. You know, the principal characters were very much us. They were both just rabid fanboys, and one of them was the responsible one, and one of them was the, I hesitate to use the word, the Peter Pan syndrome term, because I think it's grossly,
yes.
You know, grossly misused and
I think so
grossly
too.
Misrepresented. But, you know, one of us is the one who never stopped being that, you know, the guy with all the toys and stuff. Not, well, the other one, well, you know, they both had toys. One was just more responsible in many ways. But and it's not
it's called parenthood, Cole.
Yeah, I know.
Something you don't have to worry about.
That's right. But, you know, and trust me, it's not a complete analog of us because I am actually more responsible than the Mark character. But it is, you know, another fun kind of reference-heavy, you know, right down to minutia, like, you know, where he's talking about avoiding his landlord. He's like, "I made small and avoided his turbo lasers."
Wow.
And so it's chock full of great Star Wars, Star Trek. In fact, if you get the right DVD, I think all of them may have this, there is a bonus, you know, one of the versions you can watch. It actually is annotated.
Really?
And will tell you what all of the references are. Because there are ones, I know there are things in there. I'm watching, I think, okay, I get like, I tried to count one time and I just got bored with it because I'd hit about 160 references that I recognize. I said, there has to be references in here I don't recognize from things.
Yeah.
But and it's like, oh my God, this is everybody I know. This is how we talk. This is how we act. You know, and just a quick run through of just some little minor things, like, you know, in Mystery Men, you had the Blue Raja does the line, "May the Forks be with us." There's the, what were we talking about? Like, oh, the one that we saw on this list where it seemed like they were sort of like, yeah, this is kind of like Star Wars, when in reality it was literally like a move-for-move remake, was when Toad grabs the iron bar and does the Ray Park Darth Maul move. And it was fairly blatant nod to that.
It was so blatant that I remember when we were in the theater, like, everyone just started screaming and cheering when he did that one move where he kicks the bar loose of the elevator doors and catches it and spins it and puts it around, strikes the pose, and everyone was like, ah!
Yes, exactly. And then the same site where that was referenced, then they go on to try to call Storm hitting him with lightning as being reminiscent of Force Lightning. I'm like, okay, no, I think it's the opposite. Force Lightning is reminiscent of lightning. And we were talking about it before the show. I said,
how dare Storm use lightning?
Yeah, I liked it better the first time when it was the Emperor. Like, well, yeah. I'm pretty sure lightning's been around a lot longer than George Lucas.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Chris Claremont's going to take issue with that.
Yeah, so they basically, we were talking before the show, and I said, yeah, that would be like saying, or Eddie said something like, you know, Thor calling up lightning would be like.
Yeah.
So I said, the way he holds his hammer, it's like he's Yoda deflecting force lightning with his lightsaber. I'm like, no, it's just lightning.
Yeah, it's just lightning.
It may be magic lightning or mutant-inspired lightning, but it's just lightning. Not force lightning, but around a lot longer.
Yeah, of course. Well, like we were saying earlier, these references to Star Wars and movies go, Kevin Smith put it at the forefront, but well before Clerks, plenty of movies were doing it and doing it well, it very organically. And one of the most classic bits would be from Back to the Future, where Marty McFly dons the radioactive suit and appears to George McFly and says, I am Darth Vader from the planet Vulcan. And he inspires George McFly to get back to his writing the sci-fi novel, which in the future gives him great success and notoriety, finally.
Yeah, that he would never have had.
Obviously,
had Marty not gone back in time, never had. But it was a great little thing where, it's okay to reference Darth Vader because it doesn't mean anything.
To
the people of the 50s.
Well, and it's someone like, I'm sure you too, Cole, but someone like me and Vic, who were huge Star Wars fans, Jedi was had already come and gone, and we were so eager for more Star Wars that we actually were excited about the Ewok movies.
Star Wars reference was a treat.
Yeah, to get that reference in Back to the Future, me and Vic were like, yes! we felt like that was written for us.
Yeah, you were the only ones who were going to get that line. in fact, we were talking before the show, one thing that came to mind that was the most, it wasn't even really a Star Wars reference, because we did talk about, like, in E.T., where Elliot is showing the little alien visitor his Star Wars toys.
Yeah.
It's like, not only is Star Wars being referenced, Kenner is being referenced.
Right.
It's like, that was always we've exciting. Been legitimized. There's Han Solo and Greedo, and even Elliot knew who shot. Yeah.
Now, was there a blue Snaggletooth in that scene?
That's a good question. I don't know if Elliot
was that
I don't know if Mom get him the Cantina set from Sears.
Well, I was gonna say did E.T. was that sponsored by Sears? Because it could very well be in there if it was sponsored by Sears.
Yeah, all I know for certain is M&M's missed a big boat.
Oh yeah,
but
it didn't do much for Reese's Pieces popularity because they were
Reese's Pieces.
Yeah, so look at the two now.
I mean, after a while, unless you're from another planet and you don't know better, the only time the Reese's Pieces were ever any good is under somebody else's, when the whoever had the Willy Wonka line, they came out with these things called Oompas.
And it was like
if you got a bag of M&M's and a bag of Reese's Pieces and selectively just ate one of each at a time. Because it was half peanut butter, half chocolate. I'm like, that's what Reese's Pieces should have been.
They
got it wrong.
Yeah.
E.T. notwithstanding. But the thing is, okay, you have the Kenner action figures.
Yeah.
And then we're talking about that, and what sprang to mind, and people are going to freak because they're going to go check this out, and you should. In the movie Used Cars, it's not even really a Star Wars reference, but when I saw that in the theater when it was brand new, back in the day when you were excited when there'd be like a quarter of a second shot of topless chick.
For those who may not know, that's the movie with Snake Plissken.
Yes, it is. It's back before whatever disaster ended the world as we know it, and the car business went under, and he turned to crime, and then later had to go save the president.
And got an eye patch along the way.
Yeah, somewhere, I think he got out of cars when he was working on an engine, and,
some antifreeze splashed in
his arm. Yeah, just and burned it out. Then he turned to crime. But
supposedly the same thing happened to Two-Face.
Interesting.
But anyway.
Very, very similar thing. I wish I was Two-Face. But,
wow. Hakus Comics reference.
Indeed. So, basically, there's a scene in Used Cars where, you know, the plot revolves around trying to finagle the used car lot out from under its owners, and they fabricate a commercial that could be construed as false advertising. Mm-hmm. And the case goes to trial in front of a hanging judge. And on the judge's bench there is a little miniature gallows.
Uh-huh.
And there's a little figurine with a noose around its neck, and at one point he pulls the trap door and the little figure falls. And I remember, you know, I'm like 13 or 14, whatever it was, when this came out, and just freaking out in the same sort of way. This is there for me! The little figurine was a Han Solo figure. and it was obvious to me because the first Kenner Han Solo figure had the bent arm.
The quick draw arm.
Yeah, he's always ready to shoot Greedo, because even Kenner knew who was doing the shooting.
Right.
But
exactly.
But it was good, just like, and people are now going to go and look and check, and they're like, oh my God, that is a Han Solo figure. I never noticed.
My question at this point, Cole, is, was it the big-headed Han Solo or the small-headed Han Solo figure?
I want to say it had to have been the big head figure, because otherwise the noose would have slipped off.
True.
He had to have some, you know.
So it was the hydrocephalic Solo.
Yeah, it was the Charlie Brown of Han Solos. Had that macrocephaly going on there.
Yeah. Whatever.
And then there were things like I mentioned seeing a commercial for a movie that Eddie has actually seen and never.
Well, hold on before we go on to use. I have one more thing about used cars.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but I do remember there being like a topless scene or two in that film.
Yeah, there was a topless scene.
Okay, so you got more excited over the Han Solo figure than the sight of
Bear
Breast.
No, I wouldn't say that, because the topless scene comes in Act 2, and the Han Solo figure's in Act 3.
Gotcha.
So I was coming down off of the one, and then, well, hey, something else to get excited about. Because at that point in my life, topless extras and Han Solo figures were about the same level of
that's what I'm getting at.
Excitement, yeah. Well,
and all these years later, nothing has changed.
Yeah, in fact, I have to cover up my vintage Han Solo figure from time to time. It's just too...
Well, when company comes over, you have to have that.
Yeah, it's best not to have a certain kind of shame.
Unless your guests are French and they're used to that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah. They have the same thing for Han Solo in France. I don't know why. Oh, that's not what you meant.
Gosh.
But we're talking about things like, you know, whether or not we've actually seen some of the movies we're referencing. I said, I didn't see the movie, but I saw the commercial, and there was a Star Wars reference, and then it turns out it's a movie you actually have seen more than once.
Me?
Yes.
Which movie is that?
A little Matthew Perry vehicle when they were attempting.
I thought we were still talking about, like, action figure references. Because I was about to bring up... Okay, well, I'll get into that later.
Poltergeist has some Star Wars toys.
Yeah, Poltergeist. I thought that's where you were going with it.
In the, if you will, toy-nado that goes around the room.
Yeah, in the bedroom, not only do you get the Kenner figures, but you get, like, the bed sheets and the nifty, I think it's the color red, the nifty pimp red jacket that is worn in that movie has a Chewbacca on the back. Because I remember thinking, okay, that is a boss looking jacket, and it's got Chewbacca. I want that jacket. And I kid you not, I have looked for that jacket on eBay. I'm convinced it's a movie. It was a studio prop, because I have never seen it pop up on eBay.
Oh yeah, it's kind of like the leather jacket with Peter Criss from Kiss airbrushed on the back that one of the characters in Free Enterprise is wearing. I'm sure there are people who's like, oh, I want that jacket.
Yeah,
a lot of the Kiss army just kind of really jumped on that one, I would imagine. But speaking of Chewbacca,
Yes, the movie you're referencing was Fools Rush In, the Salma Hayek, Matthew Perry movie. And there's this genius scene where, you know, where her family is very standoffish with him. And so, he's trying to get into their good graces. So her brother or brothers or brother and cousins or something, they, invite him to come out with them to go, I think, rattlesnake hunting or something. Which, can we be any more stereotypical people that Mexicans would go out and hunt rattlesnakes? But anyway.
It could be worse, but he will just leave it at that.
Yeah, he invite him to go do the yard or something. No.
Oh, hang out in front of the Home Depot. Whoa.
And look at that one. That's a good one, sir. So anyway, so they're getting ready. They're getting into the back of this pickup, getting ready to go hunting. And the guy introduces himself as Chewy. And Matthew Perry said, "Hi, Chewy, I'm Luke Skywalker." And of course, they did nothing to get him into their good graces. So yeah, it's just even the simple little...
Yeah, it's little throwaways. Or I remember people freaking out and like, when the movie The Indian in the Cupboard was...
Yes!
You know, they deliberately threw the shot in where he opens it up and there's Darth Vader holding a Tyrannosaurus Rex at bay with his lightsaber.
Yeah, and I don't know if you ever saw the movie called... I never did see it.
No, I never did. It's another one where I saw a commercial.
Uh-huh. But again, that was one of those things where... You got excited as a Star Wars fan because I don't think Power of the Force 2 figures had hit the market yet.
That may not have been. I'm trying to work out the chronology. If it was, it was just very early or right around that time.
For some reason, it just seemed like I probably would not have gotten that excited had the Power of the Force figures already hit, because once Power of the Force 2 figures hit the market, that just caused the resurgence in the public eye of Star Wars.
Yes, indeed.
And that's what I'm thinking.
Reminded everyone.
Yeah, and that's why I'm thinking that Indian in the Cupboard bit was so unique, because it wasn't at a time where Star Wars was still in people's mind, you know.
Which would mean subsequently that the magic of the cupboard, or whatever the plot device may have been, was animating a vintage figure.
Yes, yeah, true.
By default.
Or a Bendem.
Oh.
One of the
I'm going to hope it was a vintage figure, because I hate Bendems.
No.
So with that, I think we are... I've exhausted the better part of my own... list and my own off the top of my head knowledge.
Okay, Indian in the Cupboard came out in 95. I'm not sure when Power of the Force 2 hit, but it was
95. So the timing would have been
potentially
even beforehand.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, gosh, there's so many. Just quickly going through the anybody who's familiar with Ferris Bueller's Day Off. The obvious Star Wars reference is when they leave the Ferrari at the parking garage, and then the two parking attendants take it out for a ride, and the scene is in slow motion, even though the music is 2000, I think it's 2001 that they're playing the music.
I believe that is, yes.
But it's like, as it's more reminiscent of Star Wars, in my opinion, because the shot is the Ferrari flying overhead over the and in it they show the pilot and co-pilot, the two attendees, evokes the thought that, you know, okay, one has to be Han Solo, the other has to be Chewbacca type thing.
Yeah.
And it's just a very quick, very, in my opinion, is not reaching, I don't think. I think that the first thing I thought of was Han and Chewie in the
Yeah, there are things, I think there's some invocation there that occurs.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you know, I'm sure there are many, many things that we're not thinking of or just haven't seen.
Oh, and then one thing, to go back to the 80s again, my science project. I remember as a kid I got really excited because there's this one scene where some of the punk high school kids are like vandalizing or like shoe painting, shoe polishing one of the cars or something. They're doing something to someone's car, and to hide their identities, they're all wearing Don Post masks.
Stormtrooper
masks. And I remember as a kid, I was like, oh my gosh, stormtroopers are in this movie. Not really, but you know, it's close enough. But, oh my gosh, yeah, Cole, we're gonna, if we're coming up on it, we're gonna have to do part two, just movies, cause
Actually, I think what we'll do is, you know, we're gonna be doing television on the next one, cause there's so much to talk about there. The third one, where we're getting into other media, is gonna be a lot more tenuous. We're gonna call that kind of other media and errata, anything that we couldn't get to or didn't think of. Because as we talked about, Eddie and I were talking about before the show, we did a little research before we sat down and started, you know, preparing for this. We decided to, you know, just refresh our memory on some things. A lot of just looking at one thing would remind us of another. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, you know, had we not done that, there would be 100 things that we would be like, oh, I forgot this, I forgot this. Uh-huh. And this way, there's only going to be like 30 that we
Well, just real quick, I have to reference this on the chance, because this is one of my favorite of the Star Wars references, and I was actually saving it for last, is the movie Can't Hardly Wait. And there's a subplot in Can't Hardly Wait where the nerds are, it all centers around, it's the end of the year, Ethan Embry is in love with Jennifer Love Hewitt, but he's never expressed those feelings to her. Someone's having a big house party, everyone's there, you know, to celebrate the end of the year. Well, the nerds didn't get invited to the party, of course, and so there's a group of nerds, and they want to infiltrate the party, so they're coming up with this plan. They're in the kids' room, and of course, in true comic sci-fi fan fashion, the room is filled with just action figures galore. And so they have these figures laid out, and they have the little props set up, little models set up to represent the house and the pool house and the pool and everything, how they're going to get in. And so he has set aside the figures for each of them. He goes, okay, you're going to be Grand Moff Tarkin, and I'm going to be Boba Fett. And the kid is like, I don't want to be Grand Moff Tarkin. Nobody likes Grand Moff Tarkin. He goes, fine, okay, you be Grand Moff Tarkin, and you be Boba Fett. He goes, I don't want to be Grand Moff Tarkin. And then finally the kid gets frustrated and goes, fine, whatever, you're both Kiss dolls. And then it's just like...
Nice.
It's just such a little thing, but the fact that you're Grand Moff Tarkin, you're Boba Fett, forget it, you're both Kiss dolls. I love that shit.
Funny because that reminded me yet of another I should close with as well. And then ironically, Kiss figures factor into this is a scene in Free Enterprise where they go to the Toys R Us. And they're wandering through and they come down the action figure aisle, and Phil Lamar's character is like, oh, these Kiss figures make me want to rock and roll all night. And the other guy's like, party every day. And then the other character's like, yeah, at least they got rid of all that stupid Shadows of the Empire with Prince Zizor. And then kid's like, Shizor! Like, shut up, kid! What do you know? You weren't even born yet.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And the parting line, Shizor. Who knew?
Oh, because wasn't Shadows of the Empire, wasn't that just like a thorn in everybody's side?
It had so much potential. I remember...
We've got to do a whole episode on what Shadows of the Empire should have been.
Oh, that's true.
That's got to be an episode.
Yeah, that'll be an upcoming episode of the Rancor Pit. Woulda, coulda, shoulda.
There you go.
So, you have that on good authority. So we're going to close the influence, the saturation, the unexpected saturation of Star Wars that is perhaps I would say it's one of the really good things that comes out of Star Wars is the fact that we're constantly reminded, more often than not in a good way, of how much it's out there, how much it influences everyone, how much, you know, the references speak to so many things. And you know, so many people on so many levels, you know, from just seeing a, like an Imperial cog on the back of a back windshield of a car. Oftentimes, even to people who aren't necessarily a lot of, if I see things like that, or a Superman or Batman chest symbol or any number of little emblems, a lot of times you think, you know, these things are so saturated, that person may not even be really much of a fan, you know, just so in many ways that's the same sort of thing we're seeing in film and television and stuff.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So we'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk up the television aspect, and then as promised, when we get into other media, it's going to be a little weaker, it's going to be a lot harder for us to have direct personal memories, because that stuff is just everywhere. But, you know, how much of it we can conjure up.
Oh, I've already got myself a good list going on.
Yes, too. I'm like, wow, The Onion, the comic strips. So we'll also work in closing on that one, anything that we just like, why did we forget that? It was so obvious.
Because I still have at least a good 12 movies I wanted to reference. Quick references, but reference nonetheless.
Exactly, and like, I couldn't believe I forgot Shizor. Who knew? So, we will be back in a couple of weeks, on time this time, and then you'll also, coming up later in the month of February, we have another fine episode of the Rancor Pit Live at watchonairlive.com. I'm actually getting accustomed to saying that now. It's kind of like, you know,
good, yes,
moving
good
into
for
a new,
you.
Moving into a new place there. So,
right,
and there's
right.
some exciting stuff coming up later in the year with Deep Ellum on Air and One Eye Joe Studio or One Eye Joe Media and our studios over in Dallas. So do tune in if you've never seen the live show. It's just a, we have a blast because it's like this, except we can't, you know, pause or.
No,
go back and
we're,
edit
we're
anything.
All in. If there's no editing, there's nothing. It's there.
So I have a tremendous respect for anyone who's ever done live television, live radio. It's been an amazing experience. Do check that out.
Yeah.
And
Just real quick also, as of today, our brand new YouTube channel is completely up to date. All 46 episodes of the Rancor Pit Live, plus, so far, I believe there are 3 or 4 of our new feature, the Rancor Bits, which are the short little miscellaneous things that we'll be putting on there time to time. Right now, you can see.
And that's
our,
not to be confused, by the way, with the new post-serial Rancor Bits.
Yes, no,
which,
not that.
It's an entirely different thing. It's almost like a Yakov Smirnoff joke. You don't eat Rancor Bits. Rancor Bits eat you.
Good night.
But actually, in reality, they're just made with Gamorrean guard meat.
Oh, I'm glad it's meat and not something else.
Like, well, you know, it's the
little droppings or something.
It's kind of like it was first created by Sam I Am. It's the only pork flavored breakfast cereal. That's
but
a bit green pork.
As of right now, what we have as far as the Rancor Bits is our very early Christmas greeting before there was a live show. Our appearance on the Fangirls live show that we did from GeekyCon 2014. Our appearance on the DeLoel show, and pretty soon will be all of our unseen but talked about Force Friday segments that have never been seen on the live show.
Very nice.
So those will soon be on that also.
Excellent. So be sure and check out our YouTube channel. You can follow the occasional tweets for the Jedi Cult Universe on Twitter, at the Jedi Cult U. And, of course, we're coming to you from the Jedi Cult Universe at JediCult.com. And Eddie and I will both be having a reunion tour 6.5 weeks after the Dallas area premiere of Fanboys in the strange time warp. Now, we'll actually be very few days from, I think less than a week from the day you're listening to this, if you catch it when it goes live on the site. We'll be in Lubbock, Texas at LubbockCon. Not to be confused with Leprechaun, which is a miniature Irish festival.
Wow.
So we'll be at Lubbock Con in Lubbock, Texas on the 20th, is that right? 19th?
I can't remember.
Obviously, I can't be counted on
that's
to know
what Google's for. I think it's the 20th.
I believe it's the 20th, if I'm not mistaken. My email was...
It is the 20th.
So yes, February 20th in Lubbock, Texas. Uh-huh. You can see us and many others at Lubbock Con. We're going to be doing a Ranker Pit live...
live on stage.
Yeah, live on stage. We'll be doing the Ranker Pit live.
And we're going to try to do it... if you can't be there, we're going to try our best to get it to where we can put it on the YouTube channel, anything.
Straight away, yes, as much as possible. And I'll probably also be trying to put on the Jedi Cult Universe YouTube channel some long overdue new Jedi Cole video selfies.
Nice.
I haven't done one of those in ages.
We need to do some at Lubbock Con specific selfies for the JCU site.
And of course, in March, be sure and if you're in the Dallas area, attend AllCon 2016, the 12th year of AllCon. I cannot believe I've been a part of this amazing convention for a dozen years now. And Eddie and I will both be there as well. There's a brand new game show that I've developed called Do You Like the Star Wars in honor of this show. There's also a Star Wars version of Don't Lose Your Geek Cards. If you want to get your Star Wars on in a game show fashion and vie for some really cool Star Wars stuff and see the inevitable Admiral Ackbar themed It's a Prize! be sure and attend that as well. And you can find out about all that at Convention Warriors Project Texas at cap-tx.info.
Yeah, so that basically it's basically the Rancor Pit live on stage again.
That's right. So, only all weekend. You're going to get an overdose of me, I assure you.
And we are working on actually getting a couple more, possibly throughout this coming year, some more Rancor Pit live on stage.
That's
events,
right.
At some other conventions, but nothing we could talk about at the moment.
And if you're especially in the Texas area, in Texas and anywhere in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or some of the other cities that are near enough by that we might be willing to go there, talk to your local convention promoter, because we do love doing the convention appearances and our demands are not remotely unreasonable.
No, not at all. So yes, please tell them to invite us to do a live show at their event. It'll be fun. We guarantee.
Absolutely. And with that, we will be back in 2 weeks with more Simple Tricks and Nonsense. And I bid you and my co-host Eddie adieu.
Adieu.
Adieu back.